Now, some of this information, what they found is that 1,300 plus what they call transnational corporations, so bigger than this brand name that we see, connectedness through the boards, through the ownerships, and then their boards of directors who actually act for them. So these people, by the way, they don't show up at the office to give out any orders. They have board directors who do that. That board director works for them, and it's protecting their identity and their anonymity and their power. But that board director sits on these many multiple boards and gives orders to the CEOs. And that's another thing that I find when I go to a march. The CEO is the bad guy. The CEO is the bad guy. The CEO is the evil guy. Guess what? The CEO reports to the board of directors. And if he doesn't do what they say, they will find somebody else to replace him. So there is a reason he does bad things. Okay, and I really want to deconstruct this a little bit, because we tend to overgeneralize and we lose specificity for action. So we say corporations, banks. Guess what? There's more to the story. And if we don't begin to look at the pieces, we don't know operationally what we can do. If I wanted to change that chair, capitalism is another one of these words. People say, capitalism! And I'm like, what do we mean by that? What do we really mean when we say that? What do you want to change? There's a lot of things we want to change. Well, look at that chair over there. If I want to change that chair to make that chair more to my liking, more comfortable for me, what do I need to change? Which pieces, which parts do I need to go to the hardware store and find a replacement for? That's what we're trying to do here, to show the parts a little more clearly. So we can say, if you really want to change that chair, the piece that's going to make the biggest impact for your comfort is this one, that one right there.
Yeah.
Go replace that piece first. Okay? That's what we're trying to do with this conversation. 1,300 transnational corporations, interlocking ownerships, and guess what? They're saying they control 20% of the global economy. They collectively own, through shares, the majority of the largest blue chip manufacturing firms, the real economy, which he says represents a further 60% of global revenue. So you've got like these interconnected links, and before you know it, you've got a whole chunk of the global economy controlled by very few boards of directors, ultimately. Of that 1,300 something companies, they find 147 what they're calling super entities. They control even more. In effect, they said, quote, in effect, less than 1% of the companies were able to control 40% of the entire network, says Glatfelter. Most were financial institutions. The top 20 included Barclays, JP, Goldman. Okay? So I think that really pulls into the story that there's banks in these networks. And who is financing the enormous production increases of the world's dirtiest fossil fuels? Now, this is a chart. It's about coal. So it's not fracking per se, but it is a data about coal. And we can maybe make some conclusions or make some assumptions about how it is for fracking. This comes from a couple of mostly European organizations, German, etc. From 2005 to 2013, 89 commercial banks poured 118 billion euro into mining. Lion's share, 71%, was from 20 banks. Together, these banks financed enormous coal mine expansions around the world. There's a source, Finance Green Watch. This is a chart that kind of shows this in its imagery, which I think can make an impact. The kind of money that banks are lending in credit lines to these mining entities. Okay. And by the way, I should also say, yeah, there's usually mining here. How could I forget that? Even the corporations that I know, like the Murdoch Corporation.
Just the one that's right by that face.
Even like the Murdoch Corporation, the News Corporation of America, in case any of you follow that corporation, the family owned mining in Australia too. It doesn't show up under the headline of News Corporation. It's above that, the ownership, blah, 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 mining. Okay, so there's a lot of interconnectedness here than meets the eye. All corporations need bank credit to run their operations. Fossil fuel corporations are no different. We're going to go into some data here. A lot of people say, well, corporations have all the money. They have all the money. Does that mean corporations don't need any money from banks? Guess what? Corporations borrow a lot of money from banks. if you have a lot of money, you don't use your checkbook to make more money. You use your checkbook to get loans. So you can multiply the amount of money you have in your hands to get a return on your little piece of capital that you're putting in. It means your return is actually much, much bigger, right? If you can leverage, it's called leverage. This is an important concept for us to know. Even the richest people in the world borrow money. It's cheaper for them to borrow money and get a big return and pay the interest back than it is to try to build a little business based on their own capital.
OPM, do it with other people's money.
And OPM, other people's money, it's a very important principle. I think we all understand that. That's really the way it works. I mean, they made spoofs of that on Broadway many years ago. They actually use a small amount of shareholder money, as little as possible, and borrow the rest. They chase returns around the world to beat that interest rate. That's a motive force for constant growth. That's another thing people talk about. Growth, growth, growth. It's just all in our minds. Guess what? There are people in these corporations trying to repay interest before they can declare dividends. So before they can make their money, they have to pay the banks first. So they are chasing after returns, okay? Banks create money for them. We're going to get into this, how money is created. A quick look at SEC filings can reveal this dependency. And in blue, you can see, this is for Halliburton. Now, this is one of the biggest. We all know Halliburton, big fracking. Dick Cheney is a major, he was an executive, I assume. He's a big owner of shares in his family.
He used to be CEO.
Yes, and I assume also he's a big owner of shares in the company. We can see, look at this, even they're the richest. 1.9 billion of letters of credit, bank guarantees, and surety bonds. We found this in the SEC filings, the documents, you know, those annual reports. They have 2 billion in letters of credit available to them to use at any given time. Counterparties for foreign exchange and interest rate swaps. Global commercial and investment banks are their counterparties. Is that trillion or billion? 2 billion, 5-year revolving credit agreement between different banks. This is money that is available to them to use to do all that drilling. Underwriting agreement, that's a little more complicated. There are banks who are going to sell on stuff into the market and get them even more money from other people. Again, now Peabody, another big one. We chose these really big ones to show you that even the big ones are borrowing, getting lots of credit to make their business work. Here's $2.3 billion in cash and cash equivalents, $1.5 billion available for borrowing under the revolving credit agreement. Here's about the money they borrowed to buy a MacArthur company, which I think is a bank. Is it a bank? No, it's a mining company in Australia. Look at how much they borrowed. They didn't pay their own money to buy that company.
Do they get especially low loan rates?
Well, you know what? Big corporations are going to get better rates than small corporations. I mean, that's all kind of relative to credit ratings. But yeah, I mean, if you're a bank and you want to lend out money, who better to lend out money to than a monopoly, basically? You're going to get your money back. 211 term facility, up to a billion. I mean, I think we can just make it clear.
I just want to make a comment. At the bottom line, it says what the bank was, U.S. Bank National Association.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know that. I haven't heard that. But that's the fifth largest bank in our country. It's a Western
bank, National Association.
Midwestern bank.
It's
the fifth largest bank in the... I never...
It's a name, but the holding is U.S. Bancorp,
yeah,
which Bancorp is the real holding company. But that name, it doesn't even seem like it's a bank. Look, what's a nice association. They help each other. They give each other loans. You know? Okay, what are the effects? First use is a term I think we all need to understand. First use of money. Who is the first use of this money, and who is deciding that? Okay, the banks, when they create credit, they're deciding the first use of that money. And they're going to give that credit to the oil industry. And then the oil industry is going to pay the oil workers, and they're also going to pay lots of other people. But it filters into the economy from there, right? And then if we're lucky, there's a tax rate on that at some point, and we get to use it for the services and things we need for our society. That would be ultimately last use. After it's taxed, it's last use, right? Think of it that way. So all the things for human needs are last use. And fossil fuels and many other things are first use. But who's deciding? Owners of banks and fossil fuel industry.